Hey there, I'm your host Alexis Newland and you're listening to The Brave Podcast. I am so happy you're tuning in today. Each week, a friend and I get together and talk about what makes them brave. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite cup of coffee or tea, and get ready for some engaging conversation. Hey guys, welcome to episode 43 of The Brave Podcast. So stoked to have you guys all tuning in today. It is at this time the end of October, which I am fingers crossed that it is cooling down next week. I so want it to be cold. If you are in the Southwest, you totally understand my complaint. And I know I live here. I chose to live here. I live in the West, really, not South. But if you live in this area of this part of the country, you know that it takes forever to cool down. I know, like, this week is when it happens, and I love fall, so I just want to wear my fall clothing and my hoodies and drink cocoa and eat soup and not be made hot by doing these things. That's what I'm looking forward to, you guys. All right, so as I'm rambling on about the weather here, before I get into our guest, I want to let you guys know about this wonderful retreat my friend Dr. April Jones is putting on. It's a day to kind of renew yourself. It is an online retreat. It is being put on by the Drifted Drum Company. And if you sign up and use the code BRAVE, you get 10% off. And I will put a link to that retreat in the show notes. All right. So I hope you guys are doing great. And I think you're going to love our next guest. This guest was from the UK, which blew my mind that I talked to someone from another country who I've never met before, and he had the coolest story. You guys are going to absolutely love hearing about Lee and the adversity he pretty much overcame. He dealt with mental health issues, with losing function of his body. He started his own business. He's just so encouraging and fun to listen to. I think you guys are going to absolutely love this interview. So without further ado, here is my interview with Lee Chambers. I'm excited to do this. And yeah, thank you so much for reaching out. All right. So I'm going to have you introduce yourself and tell people who you are, and then we'll kind of kick off the interview.
Super. So I'm Lee Chambers. I live in a city called Preston in the north of the UK. It's pretty close to the Atlantic border, looking across the pond to the US on the east side. And we are north of places such as Manchester and Liverpool.
Okay.
And only around 4 to 5 hours drive from London. It's generally very wet here. And I've grown up in this part of the world and I still live here today despite traveling around a little bit. In many ways, it's home. And I come from a blue-collar family. So my parents, very hardworking, instilled me with a work ethic. They identified quite young that I was quite talented in education and pushed me to go to university. Became the first one in my family to do so. I had some mental health struggles at university that challenged me to really have to look deep inside myself and start to, you know, navigate the world in a more adult way. As I made that transition from child to adult, but came with its own difficulties. I managed to go back to university and graduate. Unfortunately, this was in 2007, so not the best time. I then got myself a job as a graduate and then lost it again due to the economic crash in 2008.
Okay.
So that led me on the path to start up my own business and go back into work in a different field, which led me on an interesting journey where my business took off in a lot of ways and I became materially successful and found that I was able to then meet people and meet my wife and have my son. Things were going relatively smoothly and I'd become more comfortable than I probably should have been. And then in 2014, I became ill and over the course of a week, lost the ability to walk.
Wow.
And that in so many ways changed my worldview, gave me a chance to reset and reconfigure and redefine what was going to be important to me in the future. And the process to recover took me around a year.
Okay.
And through that, I really managed to chisel my character and what my purpose and mission was. And then I spent those coming years since then really recovering and spending a lot of time with my son and my daughter. And now they've started school. I've launched a business, which in so many ways is to help other people find that purpose and mission, define that, and then really start to look at the health and their energy and how they can propel themselves in that direction while ensuring that they are becoming happier, gradually becoming healthier, and starting to really anchor into what they want to achieve by the time they travel to the next world from this world, and really, in so many ways, just have the time and the space to think, because we don't get into a car and then just start driving.
Yeah.
We actually decide where we're going, where our destination is. Exactly. But in our lives, how often do we just sit down and say, this is where I want to go? How am I going to get there?
Yeah. I love it. Thank you. That was a great intro to who you are. So I'm going to have you go back to the mental health struggles. You said it was in 2007. Do you mind explaining what was going on and how that kind of started to shape your future?
Yeah. So in so many ways, I'd had that kind of late millennial childhood. So while my parents weren't around a lot because they were working, my dad quite often worked 12 hours a day. There was a point in time where my mum was working 3 different jobs. And really, that was to ensure that we were never, me and my brothers, I have 2 younger brothers, and we were never hungry.
Okay.
We were never homeless. You know, we always had our basic needs met. And we had that childhood where, in so many ways, I would take myself off to church on a Sunday morning with both my parents away at work. And I was like 6 or 7 at this point.
Yeah.
Walking down to be part of the congregation. And truth be told, that comfortable childhood meant that in so many ways, my parents smoothed out a lot of those bumps. So that when I went off to university and moved out and suddenly got the autonomy and the freedom, it felt great.
Yeah.
Like in so many ways, that ability to step outside of yourself and really start to define who you are. Except that about halfway through that experience, I started to struggle because I really was trying to access myself. Really dig deeper down into who I am, who I'm going to become as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
How can I express that authentically and bring that to the world? And what I found is, didn't have the ability to navigate my emotions and feelings. Didn't have the self-awareness to really figure out who am I? And that's a challenge because, especially as a young male, and again, when you have that background as a young man, I grew up in that society where you don't really talk about how you feel.
Yeah.
You don't really build that self-awareness or emotional intelligence. You kind of taught to go out and be athletic, to be intelligent, to excel at a technical field. At no point had I actually had the time to really sit down and say, how do I navigate my own thoughts, feelings, and emotions? How do I start to understand why I do what I do? And what I found is I just didn't have the key. So without that self-awareness and emotional intelligence, I couldn't actually dig deeper into myself to find out who I wanted to be. So I then looked out to society. And again, as a young black male, I'm very scientific, quite entrepreneurial. Look out to society and there is sports stars who look like me. There is rappers that look like me. There is film stars that look like me, except none of them were really like me.
I totally get what you're saying, yes.
So I couldn't feel like I could model from them because there just wasn't that connect there. So then I looked back to my past and realised that quite often we kind of model from our parents, our own male role models in our lives. My own father is a good man, but we're very different and we never really had a deep conversation beyond the surface in all those years. I just realized that ultimately I didn't have anyone to reference from.
Mm-hmm.
Society wasn't giving me a representative ability to model. And I wasn't being able to find myself through myself. So that led me to start to become quite frustrated and I started to isolate myself because I was almost avoiding this reality that I had to really, deep down I knew that I had to be courageous and continue to push myself out of my comfort zone to chisel my character. But at the same time, I'm quite introverted. So my own energy comes quite often from being around myself.
Mm-hmm.
And back then I was pushing out to be more neurotypical and I was draining myself while trying to find myself. And I didn't have the balance right.
Yeah.
But also for years, my intelligence is, I'm quite a high-performing academic student without putting any effort in. So I was very lazy. And what then happened is, obviously, when you can go through school and college and you just get the grades without trying.
Yeah.
You suddenly find that at some point on the educational journey, things get a little bit harder and you have to try. And yeah. I hit that point at that same time as well. So it's like all of a sudden it started getting hard. And for the first time in all these years, I actually had to try. And I was a bit resistant to that because it was change. It was different.
Yeah.
And again, I was doing a presentation in front of 300 other students. And me being me, hadn't really prepared. I just thought, I'll be fine.
You swing it.
I got halfway through and I choked and froze in front of everyone. And another student finished off my section. And again, that kind of like chopped my confidence. And a lot of these events together just led to me starting to avoid rather than approach the challenges of life. Because I just felt like I didn't have the key. I felt that things were falling apart a bit. So I started to miss lectures, miss exams. I stopped going to my job. I stopped going to any societies or events. I started trying to avoid my friends. And eventually led to a point where I isolated myself from my dorm for 2 weeks. And my parents came to get me and took me home. So what that did is it then gave me the space to reflect. Once I was out of the cycle and out of the pressures of trying to perform and be present and be there, and going home actually give me the release, really, but also the space and the time to just sit and analyse what had happened.
Yeah.
And there's a realisation there that ultimately this is the first significant challenge in my life. And I'd really not seen it as a challenge. I'd seen it as a threat and tried to run away.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, in life, adversity doesn't discriminate.
No, it doesn't.
Everyone goes through challenges all the time. Yeah. And that childhood of comfort, it set an unfortunate expectation that life would be comfortable. But if you're comfortable, you're not going to grow. And nobody's life is comfortable.
No.
So that kind of expectation had been smashed. But because that expectation had been smashed, it actually gave me the space to think, well, this is just one of many challenges I will face. And yet it's how, not the fact that the challenge comes, because so often the challenges that we face are not in our control.
Yeah.
It's going to be how you take the challenge and then respond to it that's going to be the man who you become. So I spent that time in that space at home to actually look back and see what had happened. I look back and realise that on that stage, I hadn't failed. I'd just not been prepared.
Yeah.
And started to take the emotion away from a lot of these things that were, you know, making me feel negative about myself, realising that so often we attach emotion to events and to, you know, certain scenarios, but it's not us. It's not that I felt that. It's that it felt like that. So yeah. At that time, I was not socializing, but it wasn't because I was depressed. It's because it felt depressing to admit, because people are going to ask the questions, where have you been? You know, why have you been quiet? Why have you been avoiding us?
And
the truth is, at that point, I realized I need to build myself back up. This is going to take time. But if you can take ownership over this finding yourself, you're not going to sit here and be able to find yourself by thinking. You're going to have to go back outside of your comfort zone and gradually shape who you are going to become through experiences, both the good ones and the bad ones, through the winters and the summers, because the whole world cycles around and you're going to have good times, you're going to have bad times, you're going to be up at the top of the mountain and then you're going to be in the valley again. But you need to have your head up to see the next mountain you're going to climb. And I realized that through those challenges that, to be honest, it was a sign, almost like you get a pain in your leg to tell you something's wrong.
Yeah.
That kind of struggle was telling me that I wasn't finding myself because I wasn't going about it the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. How long did that period of time take for you to kind of go back to reflect and to kind of let yourself heal to be ready for the next thing that you were going to do?
So it took about 6 months. What happened is I then actually returned to university and then finished and graduated. So that became validation that you can face significant challenge. You can ultimately fail a year of university, but you can go back. You can bounce back again. Yeah. Go back with a deeper understanding of yourself. Go back and apply yourself more thoroughly. So in that time, I realized that I wasn't trying.
Yeah.
That resistance to actually doing anything outside of university to develop myself academically is holding me back. But you don't see that when you're in the storm.
Yeah.
Until somebody plucks you out and lets you see it from above. And then you see all the bits around the storm that you couldn't see because you had the storm in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so often, like as that young man, I had that fear of failure. I didn't want to fail. My parents had, you know, ultimately put me in that position to be the one who went to university, set the path for future generations of our family to know that they can do the same thing,
yeah,
to be the precedent. Because, I mean, so often, naturally being from a black and more disadvantaged black background, the opportunities are less for us to really access those high levels of education.
Yeah.
And my parents were really desperate for me to do that and then show our cousins and other people in the community that you can do that as well. And that still forms part of my message today, where I go out and say, you know, you can, if it's what you want to do and you, you know, you dig deep inside yourself and you realize I want to follow an academic path to go and get this particular career, then you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good for me to be a beacon for that, because I then, you know, I put myself in a position where my brothers could see me doing it.
Yeah.
And now my youngest brother, he started university last year. And that's a really good feeling. And yet through that, I then managed to finish and graduate. And then graduating really opened me up to realize, so you can go very deep into these challenges and you can fall quite far, but you can still pick yourself up. It's not terminal.
Yeah.
And therefore, you shouldn't fear these challenges in the future, because they're going to keep coming. But ultimately, when you're in that place and you're very self-absorbed, you don't see the whole world around you that's supporting you. All the other human beings who feel the same way and have been through similar challenges, because we're not alone. There's billions of people on this planet who are feeling just the way you are right now, going yeah. through those same challenges. When you open your mind to see that, you realize that, you know, you're so far from alone. You're actually together, and that gives you the strength to keep going, because you know that's what helps you get your head up to see where you're going. And so often when things get really, really difficult, that's when you start making progress and growing and starting getting closer to your potential.
Yeah. Was it hard to explain to your friends once you came back what had happened? Was there like any shame or anxiety in doing that?
It was certainly challenging to kind of, I think the bigger thing is it was more difficult to articulate at the time, because this is 15 years ago now. It was 2005 when I went through this, and there wasn't the mental health awareness. There wasn't the resources and the online mm-hmm. support, and there wasn't the atmosphere where people could have these conversations more often. The best thing I could actually do was actually explain it to people like I'm explaining it to you now. I just said, you know what, I talked on stage, I wasn't applying myself, and it just all got a bit much for me. And
yeah.
I didn't know who I was. And I've gone home now and I've spent some time really reflecting and looking back on the past and what I actually want for the future. And I suppose I kind of said, now I'm back and I've got more clarity of mind. I know more of what I want to become. And now having that kind of destination in my head, I feel so much more aligned to what I'm doing. I feel like I've got a path to move on. Whereas before I was like looking ahead and it was just all foggy and I couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I described it. I almost described it through like analogy.
Okay.
I couldn't find the terminology to really kind of express it to people other than try and create a picture in the mind of how I felt and how those stages then played out.
Okay. And so you said what did you graduate in, by the way?
So international business psychology.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so you got a job and then you said you lost that job and you decided to start your own business. How did you come to that conclusion to start, and what steps did you take to like build your own business?
Yeah. So what happened is I'd always been quite entrepreneurial in mindset. So as well as being like an academically talented child, I was also quite disruptive and curious.
Yeah.
So I was that child who was asking my mum, have you finished with this? Can I go and sell it on the end of the street? And I was selling candy at school for double the price I'd bought it for. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And I was that child. And then, you know, naturally the principal comes and tells you that you can't carry so many sweets around and you've not got a hygiene license, so you can't sell them on property. but yeah, and to be honest, I'd written a business plan for a video game business while I was at university, when I was starting to think what I wanted to do. And I took it to a business advisor and he said, you know what, Lee, this is a great plan. Really sound, watertight. You know, this business will work in principle. Obviously, naturally, business can go anywhere. It's a real science. But he said, like, this plan, this forecast, you'll struggle to pull it off because this is a market where you're trying to penetrate into it as someone with, you know, zero credibility because you're just a young student. And also it's a market that's heavily controlled by the old guard, old fashioned, more traditional people within Europe. Effectively said that, don't take it personally, but you're black, you're young, and you've got an attitude problem. That is how they will see it. I see you as a talented young man who's got a disruptive attitude who will make change in the world. But they will see you like that. And they'll see you as someone who's going to come and disrupt the patterns and try to make change. And they won't like change.
Okay.
You're going to struggle. You're going to walk into that room to pitch to them and they're going to look at you and think, not this guy. Don't trust him. He looks like he's going to bring something that's going to change things and we don't want change. So that kind of made me think, because this didn't come from a place of hate. It came from a place of, if you're going to go for it, expect it to be difficult.
Yeah.
And that kind of put me off slightly. I decided to, at that moment in time, maybe I'll go and get a career instead. So I had a real think about what I wanted to do, try to align and look back on the things that I enjoyed and why I enjoyed them, try to connect those threads and realize that the two things I really like doing are helping people, working with data, statistics, and figures. Put them two together. And I decided I wanted to become a financial advisor.
Okay.
So I could work with people's finances to increase their financial well-being, but also be able to work with all the percentages and the compound interests. So I got both sides of that.
That's a gift. Yeah. Not a lot of people like that. Yeah.
so that seemed like a great path. But as you can imagine, in 2007, that was right at the top of the boom.
Yeah.
So I managed to get on a graduate scheme here at National Bank in the UK. And that was obviously quite a prestigious position to get at the time. Naturally, then what happened is only 3 months in, the economic crash, credit crunch hit, and all of a sudden people around me were packing the desks up. My training and professional qualifications were all funded through the company. So I had $12,000 of qualifications that were going to be paid for me as I worked through.
Yeah.
And they pulled me in and said, we're not going to fund any of those qualifications because of the economic crisis. And I was like, man, like, I don't have $12,000.
Yeah. To pay for those myself. You just graduated. Yeah.
And I'm like, I've just graduated. I'm a student and I'm not from a wealthy background, but it didn't really matter. Because it was only a few weeks later that I then was made redundant from the job. So what that really did is it reinforced two significant points. Firstly, if you want professional education, don't rely on corporations and organizations to do it for you.
Yeah.
Save up your own money, pay for it yourself, choose what you do. You'll then be accountable to yourself and you'll have ownership over the outcomes. And you'll be much more likely to complete because you've got skin in the game, you've invested in it yourself.
Yeah.
The second thing I really took away from that is I would really like to run something that I couldn't be made redundant from or fired from. In fact, something where the only person who could fire me would be myself. And that was then the catalyst for, I'm going to launch this business. So I got that advice, but you know what? I like being an underdog and I like to do things when people said you can't. Because I don't like conforming to society. So that disruptive nature said, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to show them that even though they said it wasn't the best idea for me, that I'm going to break into that market and I'm going to make a success of myself. So I went full on head on into that. Naturally, at that time, I looked for other finance jobs because I'd really mapped that pathway out in my head.
Yeah.
I saw it as something that I could do. There was no finance jobs at that time. It was like the Desolus. There was nothing.
Yeah, there was nothing at that time, yeah.
So I actually took a job in local government, which really helped me then see and start to understand the other side of the coin from corporation to government. It was a very, very different atmosphere.
Yeah.
But that gave me some skills and ability to navigate different industries, which was really useful. But I set up that business and it was set up out of my parents' back bedroom because I moved back home. I didn't have much by way of capital at that point. I started it off one paycheck and in a year it was up to six figures.
Really?
It went big. I was really in so many ways. 2008 was a really good time as all of a sudden the recession hit.
Yeah.
But the online world suddenly exploded.
Yeah.
So I was in the right place at the right time, selling really what at the time was a very good thing to sell. And that business then doubled in revenue for the first 3 years. So
that's amazing.
It took off like a rock. And all this time, I was still working in local government for $25,000 a year. And there became a point where when the austerity hit here, so local government's budget started to be cut, I then left the job because I felt like I was taking a job of someone else who could really do with that money.
Exactly.
So I was obviously taking money from the business. And I then decided I wanted to do something else helpful, something more voluntary. So I started helping people who become unemployed.
Okay.
And help them to really find what industry they'd like to work in based on the type of person they wanted to become.
Okay.
And then looked at starting to build the confidence up and starting to help them see themselves as more valuable to the world. Because so often when you lose your job, you lose that part of your identity and
your confidence. Yeah.
And then I would help them to communicate their value and their passion for that position in interview. And that was the start of me helping someone on that journey from not having that clarity to having more clarity and then more confidence and then more ability to articulate it.
Yeah.
And I realized that was very similar to my journey in university from not being able to see and confidence being low to getting more vision, then more confidence and then more ability to speak it. So I really anchored into that. And obviously because the business was doing so well, I then bought my first house, I met my wife and had our son. And then in 2013, it was a really, really busy year where we bought our first house and renovated it. We went holidaying in Florida in the Caribbean. We got married. It was a really naturally like a time when things were very settled and comfortable. Because financially, we were very comfortable. And what kind of happened is in so many ways, I wasn't really growing. because the business was great, but it wasn't really a great expression of me.
Okay.
Because I started to feel actually a little bit uncertain that, you know, transporting video games around the world is great as a business, but it didn't really feel very purposeful. I was like, I feel that I can make more of an impact, but maybe I'm going to have to make impact by running the business, but then using the economic benefits from the business to volunteer.
Okay.
And try to find more purpose that way. And it was around that kind of time that I then became ill and lost the ability to walk. And naturally what that did is put me in a hospital bed for a period of time where I had a lot of time to really start to reflect, because you have a lot of time to reflect when you can't move.
Yeah. What diagnosis? Because I work in pediatric rehab, and so I come across kids who have certain diagnoses like that. So what did you get diagnosed with? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So it's autoimmune arthritis.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. So it's similar to other autoimmune conditions, but effectively my immune system attacks particular type of connective tissue in my joints.
Okay.
And obviously caused massive acute inflammation to the point where literally my knees were like footballs and my ligaments, my tendons were all over the place. And it happened very quickly. So less than a week from absolutely fine to being stuck in a hospital bed, not able to shower myself, go to the toilet. I couldn't even feed myself properly because it hit my shoulder and my wrist as well. So I was effectively immobilized and very, very painful initially because of the sheer inflammation and the sheer force it was putting through my joints. As my body literally was like, I'm going to reject, not happy.
Wow. How old were you when all this was happening to you?
So I just turned 29. So obviously during this period of my life, my wife is 6 months pregnant with my daughter.
Wow.
My son is 18 months old. And I've just turned 29. I'm thinking I'm soon going to be a 30-year-old father of two. So that sounds like on paper, have to be more sensible. So I was like of myself, like, I've just turned 29. I'm going to have a little project of things to do before I'm 30 that are not so sensible and that are a bit out there, because I know after that threshold, you almost have to be more sensible.
Yeah.
And suddenly that didn't matter at all, because I was in hospital and suddenly completely lost my mobility, but also my independence. And naturally in that position, you're in shock at first.
You are, yeah.
There's no ability to process the severity of it initially. But after that shock dissipated, the frustration and despair came. So obviously from my own studies, but from my own challenges in life, I knew negative emotions, they're for a reason to express, you know, something. And it's not about suppressing them or about the fact that you feel this way. It's about the fact that as human beings, we are blazing joy all the way to deepest despair for a reason.
Yeah,
it's actually about how you express that in as healthy a way as possible. And that's the human experience. We wouldn't be human if we only felt part of that.
That's true.
So that despair, it was... ultimately the why now, why me?
Yeah.
I'm young, I've looked after myself, I've got young children, like my daughter's going to be born soon, I don't know what's happening. And that kind of passed, and then it became grief. So I started to grieve for my mobility, my physicality, my athletic nature, and just the fact that, you know, I want to run around with my children. My son's looking at me with his big eyes like, Daddy, why can't you play? And it's like, that makes you feel so sorry for yourself inside.
Yeah.
My dad's busy. But in the second week, they moved me up to a longer-term ward, and I could look out over the grasslands across the road from the hospital. And those are grasslands that looked across the valley where we live to the place where I was born and brought up.
Yeah.
And I looked out over those grasslands and realised that I'd walked over those a lot of times over the years. And now I wasn't in a position where I could walk. But what occurred to me was, until I lost the ability to walk, I've never been grateful for it.
Yeah.
And that lack of gratitude hit me like a lightning bolt. I was like, right, so all these people are coming to help you do these basic things. Your wife is coming after work. She's 6 months pregnant. She's about to go on to maternity leave and she's helping you come and shower and do the basic things. You've got your friends and your family coming to support you. You've not been grateful enough to them either. You've been complacent and you've not realized just how an amazing support network that you have until again you fell into that net.
Yeah.
And then that went wider. So it was like, you know what, Lee, you've grown up in the UK. You've never been hungry, never been homeless. You've never faced famine, environmental disaster. You've never faced war or conflict. In fact, you had free education. You had free healthcare, opportunity to work in a number of different industries, freedom to set up a business. You have all these amazing things, all this opportunity, all this abundance, and all of a sudden you become a little bit unwell and lost a little bit of you that you can probably get back with the right mindset and the right approach. You've got so much. Why are you going to lie here and be sad about the one thing that you feel you might have lost for a while? And that really just hit me very much deep down. But what it actually did is it made me realize through this suffering, I'm going to grow as a person.
Yeah.
So that ignited me like a fire inside. I was like, you know what? This has happened. I'm going to have to manage this disease for the rest of my life. And yet, it's not about the fact that this has happened. It's how I respond to it. So my health outcomes are directly related to how I now approach this. So I'm going to attack this disease as much as it's attacking me.
Yeah.
By being proactive in my recovery, by taking ownership of the health outcomes and doing everything I can to get back on my feet and walking again, I'm actually going to really think who I want to become, remove those limits and boundaries that I'm going to place on myself or that others might in the recovery. And I'm going to shoot for the moon and see where I land, hopefully on my feet.
Yeah.
So I took that approach into walking rehab and I saw other people with lower limb injuries, with other unfortunate situations which had caused them to lose the ability to walk. And you could see, like, the people who I was with, some were still suffering. They had their heads down in that waiting room, whereas others had their heads up. They were determined. They had that resilience to really keep pushing because recovery is never easy. I had setbacks. And most mornings, I was in agony and I was stiff. I didn't want to do my physiotherapy, my stretches, my exercise. But I decided this is going to be outside of your comfort zone. But the only way to grow that is to stick your toe out, literally stick your toe out of comfort and push that boundary a little bit further every single day. And I also decided that feelings don't actually matter. Not when they're aligned to your actions, because if you act on how you feel, don't feel great at the moment, so you won't do what you need to do to recover.
Exactly.
I'm going to align my actions to who I want to become. So I want to be walking around with my children playing in our garden. In fact, my daughter has just been born. She's going to be walking in around 9 months' time. And I hold her here in my arms and she's got none of society's expectations, any boundaries or limits on her. She's pure. She's just as she is. But she's going to be walking and I'm going to be walking with her. And that power of why, that reason to push through, is like a fire inside me. So the winds of adversity hit that fire. I had some problems with my spine and that set me back a few weeks. And yet, in so many ways, because it was a fire, when it got hard, that wind, it fueled it. It made it grow. I didn't have that candle inside that was going to get blown out every time it got hard.
Yeah.
So much effort to then relight that and carry on. It was being fueled by the fire. And I was determined. I kept going. After 11 months, I walked a mile unaided and stood by a light shade and just thought, if I can push myself this far and get myself back to this level of health, then what else can I do? Our potential is unknowable. And really, looking at it from a wider perspective, it wasn't anything but having that bit of courage to really push. And that's ultimately what it comes down to, realizing that you've got support, you've got people who love you. You can then show a little bit of courage and that'll amplify everything else in your life, because you actually need to be able to step out of that place. We're all in a world now where you almost start to expect that comfort is the default. You want a comfortable life, but your life isn't like a flat line.
No.
No, it's like a massive zigzag up and down all over the place. Yeah. You never really know where it's going to go, but you embrace that uncertainty because that's our experience on this planet. It's uncertain. The future, you don't know what the future is going to hold.
Yeah.
No one knew 6 months ago of the challenges we were all going to face as a human race against this pandemic.
Exactly. It just blown our world out of the water.
Yeah, but almost in some ways, we need crisis to bind together.
Yeah.
We need crisis to slow us down and help us see. And in a lot of ways, again, this has been a very challenging time. But I see it as a challenge for people to step up into rather than a threat that we should avoid and run away from.
Exactly.
It's about really starting to see that as human beings, it's the same set of virtues that have been talked about for thousands and thousands of years that will help you to define who you are on this planet and express that and be able to move through life knowing and feeling that you're on your path, that you're aligned to what you do. And the more and more I've kind of looked and started to experience the world and realized, no matter where you live, what culture you're from, what religion you subscribe to and how you see the world, it's always comes down to those same few virtues. If you're able to encapsulate them and live them on a day-to-day basis, then all of a sudden you will be that person who shines not only as a light inside yourself, but you will shine the light on other people as well and allow them to become someone who can become a beacon for their community, for their people, for who they resonate with. And that's so important because everyone's got gifts inside of them that we need to dig out over the course of our lives and really chisel ourselves to be able to utilize those and give those to other people. Because so often people, they don't shine a light on themselves. They hide in the corners and stare out of the light. But the light is there for us to step into. But we've just got to be courageous enough to step into that spotlight on the stage of life.
Yeah.
And be exposed, because you're not alone. You're never alone. So often today we become very individualistic and it's all about us. We become self-absorbed. And we're all then in our own minds thinking that it's only us that feel like that and only we can solve it and only we can make the transition. But it's not just you. We're, as human beings, we're all about connection. In fact, we live in a massively interconnected world. As much as we might like to think that such a person is a self-made man or a self-made woman or a self-made business, nothing's self-made because we're all in this together.
Oh, that is awesome, Lee. Your story is just amazing to me. All the resilience that you have and just your outlook. And I feel like this people are something that need to hear your story. So I'm so glad that you're on today. Tell us like about your business that you have now, because from this you have, I'm going to say it wrong, Essentialize.
So yeah, it's got two parts and it's obviously come from my journey, my qualifications, my experience and the industries I've worked in, but it's got a coaching side. So I take individuals through that journey to really define the purpose and the mission, direction they want to travel in. And then I bring my experience from the health side of things. So I've got qualifications in nutrition, sleep practitioning, and we look at movement as well and how we can really get more energy to travel on our path. So we travel that bit further, that bit faster, and have more endurance for the challenges of life. And then look at the psychological aspect around our mindset, our habits, and how our beliefs can sometimes move us forward. Sometimes they can hold us back, and about how we can actually start to break through some of those societal limits and some of those self-imposed boundaries that we've put on. There's so many barriers that we happen to find in our way, but those obstacles can be walked around, they can be jumped over, they can be smashed through, but it just requires that belief and that bit of courage. And then I help people to plan how to gradually become consistent with that in their own lives by building little habits together and really starting to spiral forward and upwards. And I also have a workplace wellbeing side. So we go into organizations and look at how we can create a place where everyone can express themselves and find ways to help them ensure their wellness within the workplace. So we do stuff around the emotional intelligence of leadership. We look at well-being and wellness strategy, seeing how we can bring that into the workplace through looking at inclusion and belonging, looking at how management communicates to the employees, and just looking at the environment that the employees work in and seeing how we can change that to ensure that they feel more well, more happy, more engaged and connected with the work that they do. And by combining all that together, along with some of the workshops, again, on sleep and nutrition, mindset, movement and habits, we bind that all together to really help workplaces become happier, healthier, more engaged and more motivated places to be. Because at the end of the day, we spend up to a quarter, sometimes a third of our working lives at work. Mm-hmm. So it's a massive part of who we are, how we identify, but also how we then go back in our relationships and our lives and our faiths and go and express that. If we have the energy from work, because so often people leave work without energy. Mm-hmm. My mission is to help people still leave work with energy so they can go and do and be the people that they want to be and the things that they love and the things that they enjoy. And that helps them to give back to society, be part of the society that they are, and again, be able to do things such as volunteer, the things which glue societies together, find ways to give back, to contribute, and to really have that temperance for other people.
All right, Lee, thank you so much. I'm going to put all your info. Are you just in the UK doing your business, or do you go global?
So I currently go global online. Oh, cool. I work in the US, Canada, and Australia as well at the minute.
Okay. I will put all that info in the show notes for all the people so they know where to find you. And I am so glad that I got to chat with you today and have you on as a guest at the Brave podcast. You are amazing. You have an amazing story. And I think it's going to touch a lot of people.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Alexis. Thank you for inviting me.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed getting to know Lee and hearing his story and just the encouragement he had, especially about dealing with adversity. No matter how many times you get knocked down, just get back up. Don't stay down is what I got from his interview. And I hope you guys took a lot away from it as well. All right, here are my three asks. My first ask is to rate the podcast. Rating the podcast helps people find episodes and it helps get the word out. And it also gives me great feedback for what you're loving and what I need to be better at. So definitely ratings are fabulous. I love ratings. Secondly, share the podcast with a friend. If you heard something today that absolutely encouraged you or you found that was helpful, go on and share the podcast with a friend. And finally, subscribe. You can subscribe to the podcast on your podcatcher like iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify. You can do it that way. You can also subscribe to my mailing list. If you want to get updates about all things The Brave Podcast, when I might have merch out, any giveaways I'm doing, the best way to get on that boat is to subscribe to the mailing list. And I will put a link to that in the show notes. So you can go do that. Or I can also tell you now. www.apeachandcali.com/contact us. Put your email in the little box. Boom, you're on the mailing list. It's that easy. Next week is a whole new month. We're in November, you guys. 2020, the year of, oh my gosh, what just happened to me, is finally coming to an end. I cannot believe next week is November. And so, got a whole new guest for you. It'll be a great time. I can see my family next month. You guys can hear all about that. So, have a wonderful, wonderful week. And thanks so much for tuning in. Bye.